and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. He speaks, and the sound of his voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing, and the melody that he gave to me within my heart is ringing. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. I'd stay in the garden with him, though the night around me be falling, but he bids me go through the voice of woe. His voice to me is calling, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known.
Amen.
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 It's hard and difficult to trace organized religion back to the radical who was baptized in the Jordan. As one theologian wrote, institutional Christianity is, for the most part, too institutionalized, conventional, and cowardly. Most people define Christians as nothing more than regular people who happen to go to church. Most who wear the label of Christian, which means little Christ, don't think of themselves as following the kind of revolutionary that Jesus so obviously was. Most people who go to church keep their distance from the radical elements of the faith that Jesus claimed. And for the last 500-600 years or so, the church has, I think, for the most part, been missing the point and spending more time debating baptism than living out our baptism. This symbol of welcome isn't always a source of welcome. Arguments have centered on how old you have to be. You know, believer's baptism, infant baptism. How much water is required? The debates over baptism have led many to the mistaken conclusion that baptism itself really doesn't matter. Some have decided that the central symbol, that's why our font, our baptismal font in the Presbyterian Church, is always front and center. Always front and center. So it's central to us, but some people think it isn't important anymore. Christians used to ask, does baptism save you? Now the question seems to be, does baptism do anything at all? And for many, for too many, baptism has become nothing more than a membership requirement. Because you have to be baptized in order to join the church. The baptism story in the Gospel of Luke doesn't, however, sound like Jesus is merely fulfilling a membership requirement. Now, Luke, I like Luke. He has these beautiful stories that we're going to delve into this lectionary cycle. He's a great storyteller, but he doesn't always worry about details. For instance, he doesn't care who's doing the baptizing here. If we only had Luke's gospel, we would assume that John the Baptist is in prison when Jesus is baptized. And we're like, wait a minute, go back and read it again. Now, Matthew and Mark, they mention the name of the river. But Luke doesn't bother with those details. For Luke, the baptism is significant only as a part of the larger narrative. Christ's ministry. Immersion is a wonderful ritual. It's wonderful. But in the final analysis, it's not whether you're dipped, dunked, poured on, or sprinkled. It's not about whether you're an infant or an adult or 9 years old. What matters is what follows your baptism, what comes after your baptism. Baptism is the introduction to the story. It's the first step on our journey. Luke tells the story of Jesus' baptism because of the life that follows Christ's baptism. John the Baptizer stands hip deep in the Jordan River. And if you've seen the Jordan River, it's not very wide and big. It's nothing compared to the Mississippi. Nothing. It's not even anything compared to when we get a lot of rain and the streets flood here. It's not very big at all. But John stands in that river. He's a fire-breathing dragon warning the religious crowd of the wrath to come. And I imagine him perspiring and having a hanky, and he's just patting his forehead because he's sweating for God. And John's three-point sermons are always the same. Judgment is coming. You better straighten out. And the Messiah will be here soon. John knows what it entails to be a disciple. I think John's greatness is seen that in the middle of his 15 minutes of fame, he points to someone else, and he says, there's one coming whose baptism will really be something, and I'm not worthy to fetch his house shoes. If being baptized in the water scares you, just wait, says John, till this guy comes. His baptism will bring the spirit of the holy and the blazing fire of purification. John says, Christ is coming, and there will be, I quote, hell to pay. Now, John gets a little confused, understandably, because when Jesus comes, he turns out to be so different than what John expected, right? That's kind of true for all of us, isn't it? And for his part, I think Christ is kind of tempted to just skip the whole thing. Let's not do this. So he ponders whether or not he wants to settle down in a quiet life in the country. Maybe get a 9-to-5 job. Maybe get married. Have some children. Set up an IRA. Do some investments on the stock market. And live a long life. But what does Christ do? He is baptized. Why? Because Jesus did what he taught. He lived it out. He loved his neighbors and his enemies, was friends with the poor and the wealthy, and he suffered for the good of others. Christ was true to his baptism, and he embodied the frightening way of servanthood, for being baptized makes you a disciple of Christ, not a member of an organization. Jesus' view of what we in the 21st century call membership in the church, which is really discipleship, is different from most churches. Jesus' ideas about what makes a good disciple don't look anything like those TV commercials from certain churches, right? Discipleship is about family, but it doesn't have anything to do with blood relationships. The family of God includes people who don't have a fireplace or even a home, people who think less about trivia than survival, and people with whom we have little in common. Discipleship is about having fun, but it's the deeper joy of giving what we would like to keep, listening to those who are used to being ignored, discovering how our jobs can be a ministry instead of a paycheck, and standing up for what's right, even when most of us don't agree on what's right. And discipleship is about slowing down. But it's a particular kind of slowing down. It's slowing down to listen to God, to pray, and to dream. Discipleship requires that we ask ourselves, when was the last time I paid a real price for following Christ? Baptism is the declaration that our lives are not our own, but belong to God. Baptism is a tangible expression that we have been called to be disciples of the living Christ. Now, the church had a great beginning there in the Jordan River, but now the institutionalized church sometimes spends most of its time far away from where it should be, oftentimes growing fat and lazy. The community of the baptized needs to look deep into the water and remember that our calling is to do more than engage in the privileges of membership and its entitlements. We have been placed in churches to serve, to care for others, to pray for our leaders, to learn, to teach, to give, and in some cases to die for the sake of the gospel. Baptism is initiation into God's subversive community. Did you know you were subversive? Bill, did you know you were a radical? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are subversive radicals. Far from being that sweet, gentle ceremony, baptism is the staggering promise that we will give our lives away and that we will support others who give their lives away. Now, if after his baptism, Jesus had campaigned for the job of Messiah on a platform of family values, lower taxes, health insurance for everyone, he would have never been crucified. The state executed Christ because he called for people to value those without families, to give their money to help the needy, and to include all who need grace. If we are true to our baptism, true to being a disciple of Christ, we cannot make ourselves comfortable, cannot do only what will be appreciated, cannot be satisfied with the way things are. Our baptisms demand that we grapple with what it means to follow Christ. Baptism is our ordination to ministry, our vow to live with more concern for the hurting than for our own comfort, to serve in a way others might think is a waste of time, and to take issue with ideas with which everyone else agrees. The divine promise, the promise that makes it worth it, is that those flooding rivers, that flooding water of the Jordan, will not overwhelm us. The difficulties of the baptized life of discipleship are not going to overcome us. The Spirit is present for everyone who chooses this difficult way. We are so much more than members of a church. We are disciples of the living Christ, and we belong to God. We define our baptism, discipleship, every single day of our lives. As our souls grow deeper into the water, become more grounded and rooted in our baptismal water. And what goes under the water doesn't compare to the one who goes on to follow the way of Christ. Baptism is the first step down a road less traveled. And through baptism, we are called God's own. Did you hear that? We are called God's own. We are God's beloved. How can that not change how we live our lives and how we interact with others and how we treat ourselves? God names us precious, not like Tolkien precious, but names us precious, miraculous, unrepeatable, fragile, fearful, sparkling children of God, sisters and brothers to one another. For each one of us, those heavens open and the Spirit descends and God says, "You are my child, my beloved." Thanks be to God. Amen. Amen.